Namo tassa bhagavato arahato samma sambuddhassa. Namo tassa bhagavato arahato samma sambuddhassa. Buddhang dhammang sanghang anuttarang upacayang namassami. January 2nd, 2021, Abhayagiri Monastery, Saturday night, and it's this quiet period, so a lot of the community's on forest practice right now, and just a very open, spacious period before we get into the full schedule on the 8th. So a lot of us thinking during the meditation that a lot of like it's been a lot of experiences. So I have 18 vasas now, so I've had a lot of experiences. And sometimes if the mind isn't that focused, or like it feels, or if there's like sadness or slight melancholy, or there's a mood, sometimes I just think about just past experiences, just past practice experiences. So like even though a lot of times, many times over the past years in the robes, having not been the perfect monk, having lost the plot many times and then regained it, and having made mistakes, and having had also good experiences, and having made mistakes and learned from mistakes, and having seen beautiful parts of the earth, of the world, and having lived in good practice situations, lived in solitude, had the opportunity to live in places like Daodam and Pujamgam. I just remember sitting with my friend Ajahn Jivako at Pujamgam up at the tea cave, having tea together in this cave that takes about an hour to walk up to, a very remote village, the easternmost point of Thailand. They say it's where the sun rises first in Thailand, and on the Mekong River. And just remember we were talking and it was just dark and very quiet, and you could just hear the crickets and the insects and maybe some frogs, and just talking to each other and saying like no one would just think there's these two guys sitting in the middle of nowhere in a cave and the east of Thailand on the Mekong River, just really far away from any cities. So just having had experiences like that and being able to think about that and recollect that, or just remembering walking back to my dieng. There's this word in Thai, dieng, that refers to the dwelling places at Daodam, where you live on these bamboo platforms. Dieng means bed. So going back to my dieng site with my glot set up, my mosquito net at Daodam, just going back after the meal and thinking I was stepping over a bright green vine, which then reared up under my sabong. And it was this bright green snake, and doing a little dance, and it did a little dance and got away from it. Found out later it was maybe one of the only snakes there that isn't poisonous. It's called a whip snake, and it was actually whipping around, and a very thin and long green snake. And just lots of these experiences at Abhayagiri, having conflicts with people, resolving the conflicts, you know, wanting to leave, not leaving, being glad I didn't leave. So many experiences over the years. And it continues, and just keeping that eye open for the middle way, just keep searching for the middle way. So I thought I would talk a little bit about the middle way and not talk for too long tonight, but just that there's those two extremes, the Kamasukalika-nu-yogo and the Atakilamata-nu-yogo. So that's the extreme of sensual indulgence and the extreme of like wanting to get away, like annihilation. Or also there's the three types of tanha, the bhava-tanha, vibhava-tanha, and kama-tanha. Kama-tanha, sensual desire, bhava-tanha, the desire to be or become, or the desire for existence or becoming. Vibhava-tanha, like the desire for to not be, or you could say annihilation. The desire to get away, the desire to disappear. So just kind of thinking about practical applications of those, of contemplating those extremes. And it's such a delicate and subtle balance, this middle way, because that vibhava-tanha, it gets in there so easily. So it's like this near enemy to dispassion. So like we might want to be and attain and get, and that's bhava-tanha, and then we might say like, I just want to be done with it. I just want to, just give me a rest. Just give me rebirth in a heavenly realm just so I can rest. Just give me something so I can just have at least some respite from me, from this existence, from samsara. That's the vibhava-tanha getting in there. So then that's also not going to lead to the real rest, the true rest of nibbana. So there's that bhava-tanha, vibhava-tanha interplay that's nearly always happening. Or it's just kama-tanha, it's just drunkenly seeking after sense desires. So these things just keep us in the round. We might think like, I just want to, you know, relax. But then we do relax, and then time passes and we have to do something. We have to eat. We have to do some sort of duty. We have to take a shower, we have to clean our room, or we have to do something. So there's not true final relaxation. It's like we always have to do something. We might think, in the monastery it's so difficult, like we only sleep 6 hours, maybe 7 hours. I'm so fed up, I'm so tired, I'm just gonna sleep as long as I can. Sleep 9 hours, 10 hours, 12 hours. I've heard of 16 hours, and it's just doesn't help. It's still there. The dukkha is still there. You might think, if I just sleep as long as I can, maybe it'll be okay somehow. And you can try it, and see that it doesn't help. It's not balanced. In fact, the mind gets more dull and it's harder to meditate. And so we're looking for that balance, the balance with sleep, the balance with eating, just the balance in our daily life. So we call this indriya sangvara, or like balancing the faculties, composing the faculties. Indriya sangvara. And so we're always looking for this kind of balance with sitting and walking meditation. We might think, okay, well, I'm just going to be done with it as quickly as possible, so I'm going to sit, walk, sit, walk, sit, walk, and 1 hour sitting, 1 hour walking. I'm just going to do that, and that's it. I'm going to be done with it. Vibhava Tanha is creeping in there. We're practicing with this idea like, okay, just a hard push and it's done. Then that doesn't work because it's out of balance. So we find out, okay, well, let's temper that a little bit with some study. That's why there's all these practices. We need study and practice. We need the pariyati and the patipati. So the study and the practice, balance those two. And then we need the meditation, but in the right amount, not too loose, not too tense. Probably need to do it a little bit slightly more tense than we think we need to. Just push a little bit. I remember one time, like it was the beginning of one winter retreat where I was getting pretty dull in my meditation, and I remember just in the beginning of the winter retreat making this determination like, okay, I'm going to tighten things up in the meditation. I'm going to focus on Bhutto a bit more tightly. And if it's too tight, I'll loosen up, but that's okay. I'll focus a bit more intently and just see how it goes. So like I had been quite dull in the meditation, hadn't really been able to stay with Bhutto, and then tightening it up just a little bit. And it was really good. And it was like just that push, just that little bit of pressure is like what was needed in that moment. So doing what's right in the situation. And then we slowly learn over time. If we don't give up, then we gain the blessing of experience. So there's no real substitute for experience. There's no technique that's going to give you 10, 15, 20 years of experience. How do I get 20 years of experience without 20 years of experience? You just can't, no matter how talented you are. And it's not about talent either. It's not about talent, it's about perseverance. It's like the story of Ajahn Chah, where there was a lay person who came up to him and was like, you know, I've thought about ordaining, but like, you know, I could never do it. I'm not like you. I'm not like a natural monk like you. You know, you already had very few defilements. That's why you could ordain. You know, I'm not. And then Ajahn Chah said, like, you think I didn't have any defilements? Like, you think it was easy for me? And he said, I usually get this story wrong, but I think he said, if I wasn't a monk, I would punch you right now. So it's just like, you just can't substitute anything for that experience. So it's like just thinking about some of the past experiences. It's just, it brings up a sense of joy. And also thinking of all the people I've met over the years. It's like not only having met great monks and Kruba Ajahns, but having met lay people of integrity and living now with lay people of integrity, just and that keeps going and people keep appearing, and there's just so many good people in the world, and it's amazing. So being able to live with people of integrity, our board of directors, Sangapala Foundation, just lay people of integrity. It's like you don't have corruption. You know, maybe something like that will appear down the line in the future. You know, corruption is something which is normal in Thailand, in monasteries even, and we just, the lay people here have integrity, and it wouldn't even occur, that wouldn't occur to them. Or like the firefighters who helped to save the land here in 2017. It's like, you know, we even told them they could, because the electricity was off, the food was going to rot in the refrigerator, even telling them, like, you can take some of that food from the refrigerator if you need, you know, it's just going to go bad. But they didn't. It was like this kind of just integrity, this kind of ethos, like not taking what's not given. So that I just see that as like a type of integrity. Even though actually it was given, but it was still not wanting to go into somebody else's refrigerator and wanting to provide for themselves. So we're surrounded by goodness, steeped in goodness, and we can make much of that. So when we bring up these recollections, then it helps us to balance the faculties, and we can come out of ourselves a little bit, balance the faculties, learn how to not get chasing after, lost in the bhava tanha, but also not sink backwards into the vibhava tanha, and then keeping that composure, keeping that integrity with that sense of balance. And even though it's subtle and hard to see, I think we can develop a sense of solidity in that balance. So this is very important. But we only learn it through making mistakes, through getting lost in bhava tanha and vibhava tanha and kama tanha. And as long as we're still keeping the precepts, and or at the very least, if we aren't able to keep the precepts, we make it known when we break a precept. We make it known when we break a precept. That's part of our monastic practice, big part of the practice, just being transparent in our actions, being open in our actions. The Buddha said that there's certain things that shine when hidden, and there's certain things that shine when exposed. So one thing that shines when hidden is wrong view. Wrong view shines when hidden, not when exposed. The hymns and teachings of the Brahmins shine when hidden, not when exposed. And then certain things shine when exposed, not when hidden. The sun and moon shine when exposed, not when hidden. And the Dhamma of the Lord Buddha shines when exposed and revealed, not when hidden. So that sense, like, wrong view shines when hidden, not when exposed. So it's like we're shining light on these hidden areas in the mind. And that wrong view is what's going to get us into bhava tanha, vibhava tanha, kama tanha. And wanting extremes. So, of course, I was just like the next person, you know, coming into this as an Anagarika, and I was wanting extremes. So wanting extreme experiences in the meditation, you know, being, I loved the wanpra because that could push me into some interesting experiences, and wanting to meditate in a very tense way, wanting to get the samadhi, get the experiences quickly, and then getting some good experiences, but then that would flip, and when I didn't get the good experiences, then it was a very bad experience, very unpleasant experience. Practicing restraint with food, different trying to be austere, and I would do that for a little while, and then it would flip and become indulgent, and it was just like that for a long time, seeking these extremes. There's a teaching in the Tibetan tradition that resonates with me. It's the Lam Rim, and particularly it's the lamp on the path, and Lama Tsongkhapa giving some verses about distilling the path factors and how to balance out the path. And one thing he says is, when the factors of the path come together, people who speak in terms of extremes will not impress you. People who speak in terms of extremes will not impress you. So it's like this idea, you know, if you do this practice, it's going to be extreme in some way, or speaking in the world in terms of extremes, that the world's going to end. I see that as an extreme way of speaking. So when somebody comes up to me and now and says, look, it's like the world's like going to end, like, I just, that doesn't impress me. I'm just not impressed when people say that. Maybe I should be, I don't know. But so speaking in terms of extremes, it used to be impressive. I used to be impressed by that kind of thing, but now it's peace. Peace is impressive. A sense of ease is impressive. When I see somebody who's at ease, I get impressed by that. But if I see somebody who's being really extreme in some way, then I don't get impressed by that. I used to be. It's like, oh, they're never sleeping. That's super impressive. But there's other problems that arise when that kind of thing happens. Now it's like, they're never sleeping. Oh no, not again. Or we read the teachings of the biographies of the Kruba Ajahns, like Ajahn Mun, and we think we have this idea like it's really extreme in some way, so it's impressive. But if we were to actually live with Ajahn Mun, it's not like reading his biography. It's much different. It's like distilling somebody's entire life into a book. The monks who lived with Ajahn Mun, yes, he was a great teacher, but the way they talk about him is very ordinary. Like when they talk about his daily schedule, living with him, and he would get up and do some chanting, and he would go alms around, and he'd come back, and he would have his meal. He would do 2 hours of walking meditation and have a bit of a rest, get up, maybe do some more walking meditation, sitting meditation, do any sweeping that needed to be done around his kuti, any cleaning up, meeting with people, evening time, perhaps doing some chanting, any other duties that needed to be done, sitting meditation into the night, rest. That's not extreme. And then to do that over and over and over again, and the path develops, comes to fruition. So these are just some brief thoughts. I'll just leave that as a very short talk for this evening. end with the chant on page 33, verses of sharing and aspiration.